Imagine staring at a blinking cursor for like 3 straight hours. The deadline is just breathing down your neck, your coffee has gone completely cold, and your brain just feels like an empty parking lot.
Oh yeah, we have absolutely all been there.
Right. But what if that frustrating writer's block isn't a lack of inspiration at all? What if it's simply, a broken system?
That is exactly what it is, a broken system.
Well, welcome to the Pitcot Podcast. I'm your host, Annabelle, and I'm joined by the brilliant Bill Pitcot. Today, we are taking a deep dive into dismantling the whole myth of the creative muse.
It is entirely a myth. I mean, we are going to completely rewire how you approach the blank page, replacing that panic with an incredibly reliable, step-by-step mechanical process.
And the most exciting part is that the incredible strategies we are going to explore today come directly from the Pitcot source material. Specifically, these insights are drawn from the best-selling ebooks available on our ebook store.
Yeah, these are actionable, road-tested frameworks designed to generate just an endless stream of content.
Totally. And you can grab these game-changing systems right now. Just visit www.pitcot.com/books to download them.
Once you implement the systems outlined in that Pitcot source material, you will just never look at content creation the same way again. The stress completely vanishes.
I am so ready to get into this, but before we dive into the mechanics of our first method, I have a quick request for you listening right now. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't, activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating. We appreciate you giving us a 5-star rating to propel this podcast to help others too.
So let's start by attacking that really pervasive, romanticized idea of creativity.
Yes, please.
There's this cultural assumption that you just have to sit by a window, sip chamomile tea, and, wait to be struck by a magical lightning bolt of inspiration.
Like it's a movie montage or something.
Exactly.
Right.
But if your output relies on waiting for the stars to align, I mean, your business will starve.
Which is why the Pitcot material emphasizes that creativity is a deliberate process. It all starts with building what they call an idea file.
Right, an idea file.
And we aren't talking about a messy junk drawer of crumpled sticky notes or, random voice memos you never actually listen to.
Oh, I am definitely guilty of the voice memos.
We all are. But no, we are talking about building an actual, searchable, reliable reservoir of inspiration.
And that reservoir needs to be filled constantly. Which brings us to the foundational method here, method one in our system. Which is learning how to brainstorm creatively.
It sounds a bit like a corporate buzzword, honestly.
It does, but the actual neurological mechanics matter immensely. The source material advocates really strongly for mind mapping.
Okay, so how does that work practically?
You place a central topic in the middle of a blank page, and you physically draw branches radiating outward. But the crucial mechanism that makes this actually work is the 10-minute timer rule.
I find this rule so fascinating. You set a timer, and for 10 solid minutes, you write down absolutely everything that comes to mind, and you filter nothing.
Nothing at all.
Because in the brainstorming phase, quantity is the direct, undeniable path to quality. I always think about this through the lens of grocery shopping.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. Imagine you walk into a massive grocery store, and instead of just, putting raw ingredients into your shopping cart to take home, you try to start cooking the meal right there in aisle 4.
Just setting up a stove next to the canned beans.
Right. You're chopping onions on top of the cereal display, trying to boil pasta next to the dairy section. It is a spectacular disaster.
Oh, that is a phenomenal analogy.
Yeah.
You have to gather your ingredients first, secure them in the cart, take them back to your kitchen, and then you begin to cook.
Exactly.
Gathering the raw materials and executing the final recipe are two entirely separate, distinct steps.
And trying to do both at the exact same time is why most people hit a wall and freeze up.
Yeah, if we look at the cognitive science behind that, your brain actually cannot simultaneously generate an idea and evaluate its worth.
Oh, really? It just can't do it.
No, it's two different processes. Generation relies on divergent thinking, letting your mind wander and make those loose associations. Evaluation relies on convergent thinking, applying logic, rules, and criticism.
Oh, I see.
When you try to generate an idea and simultaneously judge whether it is a good idea, your internal critic just hijacks the prefrontal cortex and shuts the entire creative operation down, Judgment is the ultimate assassin of creativity.
Wow. Which means you have to actively give yourself permission to be, like, weird and wild during those 10 minutes.
You actually have to lean into the terrible ideas. The concepts that seem entirely bizarre, wildly impractical, or completely out of left field initially are very often the raw seeds of the most original, compelling content.
That's so true.
You can always curate, edit, and polish later. But first, you just need volume. You need to pile up the raw materials without any self-censorship.
Okay, so we've got our internal generation sorted. We are gathering our groceries wildly without judging the weird produce we put in the cart.
Yes, absolutely. Load up on the weird produce.
But what happens when our internal store feels empty? The Pitcot strategies show us that we don't have to rely entirely on our own brains, right? We can pivot to finding ideas externally by actively listening to the digital water cooler.
This is huge. This is where you go out and find the places where your audience is already congregating. More importantly, it is where they are already complaining, actively debating, and, you know, asking desperate questions.
Yes. Here's where it gets really interesting. This brings us to method two, tapping into forums.
Huge goldmine.
We are talking about Reddit, Quora, and highly specific niche communities. But you aren't going to these platforms to just doom scroll. You are going there as an investigator.
Exactly. You're looking for patterns.
You are looking for threads with massive engagement and recurring frustrations. I mean, we all know that incredible feeling of relief when you are struggling with a hyper-specific problem, like a weird error code on your website. You type it into a search engine, and you find a dusty 8-year-old forum thread where someone has asked your exact question.
Yes. And very often, the answers in those threads are incredibly fragmented.
Oh, totally.
One person has half the solution, another user corrects them 3 comments down, and a third person offers a workaround that sort of helps.
It's chaos.
It is, but that chaos is a golden opportunity for a creator. The strategy here is to find that high engagement, messy Reddit question, synthesize all those fragmented answers, and build something pristine.
Right.
You answer that question better, more comprehensively and more elegantly than anyone else on the internet, and you publish it as a dedicated, definitive guide.
Because the market research is literally done for you. The audience has collectively raised their hand and screamed, "We need this." And the Pitcot material pushes this concept even further with method 4, which focuses on subscribing to e-zines and newsletters. It operates on this principle that the best creators are actually the most voracious consumers.
Oh, 100%. If you want your output to be elite, your input needs to be exceptional. By subscribing to the top industry newsletters and observing what your peers and competitors are talking about, you get the opportunity to riff on those topics.
Yeah, you aren't starting from scratch.
Exactly. You don't have to invent a new conversation. You can simply join a conversation that your readers are already deeply invested in.
Which creates an aura of instant credibility. You aren't standing alone in an empty room trying to shout a brand new topic into existence. Instead, you're walking into a crowded, energetic party and adding a highly insightful, nuanced comment to the biggest conversation already happening in the room.
You are tracking the pulse of the community. By leveraging forums and newsletters, you are actively listening to the silent majority. You are taking their deepest interests and reflecting them back, packaged with your unique expertise and perspective.
We've gone from mining our own internal thoughts to mining our specific digital niches. But the Pitcot source material pushes us even further outward. It tells us to look at the broader world.
The whole ecosystem.
Right, including breaking news and completely unrelated fields of study. This brings us to method 3, setting up industry news alerts so you can execute the 1-2 punch content strategy.
I love this one. The 1-2 punch is a brilliant architectural approach to content. The first punch is a rapid reaction to breaking news in your industry.
So like a hot take.
Yeah, let's say a massive new technology drops or a major new regulation is passed. You immediately publish a quick, insightful hot take analysis that gives you a massive temporary spike in relevance and algorithm favoritism. But news has an incredibly short shelf life.
Right.
You can't build a long-term foundation on yesterday's headlines.
Yeah, because that algorithm spike dies off after 48 hours.
Exactly why you need the second punch. You take that same topic, step back, and create an evergreen version of the content. You build a deeper, broader, comprehensive guide that explains the foundational principles behind the news.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
That piece will slowly climb the search engine rankings and remain relevant for years, constantly driving traffic long after the initial news cycle has just vanished.
I love the mechanics of that, but I do have to push back a little here. Isn't chasing the news cycle fundamentally exhausting?
It can be, yeah.
I mean, how do you balance the fleeting nature of trends with creating content that actually lasts. Because trying to react to every single headline in real time seems like a guaranteed fast track to profound burnout.
That is a very real danger, which is why strategic curation is critical. You don't chase every headline. You only react to the news that fundamentally alters your audience's landscape.
Okay, that's a good distinction.
But to your point about burnout, if we connect this to the bigger picture, that leads perfectly into Method 6 reading widely. To prevent exhaustion and keep your ideas fresh, you must intentionally consume content outside of your immediate niche. Read fiction, read poetry, read obscure historical biographies, read quantum physics.
The classic example is how studying the way ants forage for food could totally inspire an incredible viral article on managing global supply chains.
Yes, that is the essence of combinatory play. Creativity isn't always inventing something out of thin air.
Yeah.
It is often just remixing existing concepts in novel ways. The broader your input, the more diverse your raw materials become.
Yeah.
Cross-pollination is the absolute secret sauce of true thought leadership. If you only read the exact same three marketing blogs that everyone else in your industry is reading, well, you are only going to write the exact same derivative articles everyone else is writing.
You just become a localized echo chamber. But if you read a fascinating book on the architecture of medieval castles, you might find a defensive metaphor that completely revolutionizes how you explain corporate cybersecurity to your audience.
And that unexpected connection is precisely what makes content memorable. The human brain just loves when two entirely unrelated concepts are suddenly smashed together to reveal a hidden truth.
That is such a powerful framework. Let's pause for just a quick second. For everyone listening who is already feeling their creative gears turning and wants to dig deeper into these frameworks, you need to visit www.pitcott.com to explore even more.
Highly recommend it.
And while you are doing that, subscribe to our channel if you haven't and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. And don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a reading.
Taking a moment to do that genuinely helps us continue bringing these incredibly detailed deep dives directly to you.
Okay, let's pivot to a completely different strategy. We just spent all this time talking about looking out at the whole wide world forums, news, unrelated industries for inspiration. But Method 5 from the Pitcott material made me laugh out loud because it is so glaringly obvious, yet almost universally ignored.
Oh, I know exactly which one you mean.
Method 5 says, mind your own backyard. Revisit your past work.
Okay, let's unpack this because it feels like cheating, but it isn't.
It is arguably the largest blind spot for modern creators. We are conditioned by social media algorithms to feel this immense, crushing pressure to invent something entirely unprecedented every single week.
It's exhausting.
But high-quality content ages like wine, if it is tended to properly. You have an entire library of assets sitting right behind you.
You don't always need to start from a blank page. You can look at your most popular posts or videos from 2 years ago and just give them a fresh coat of paint.
Exactly.
Add one brand new section detailing a recent development. Update the outdated statistics. Provide a fresh angle based on how the industry has shifted since you originally hit publish. The Pitcott source specifically suggests the greatest hit strategy.
Oh, I love that one.
You take your top five performing pieces of all time and expand them into massive ultimate guides. But I often see creators hesitate here.
Why is that?
They feel a sense of guilt, as if updating an old post is somehow, you know, recycling or cheating their audience out of new ideas. But revisiting old content accomplishes the exact opposite.
Right.
It proves to your audience that you are deeply committed to keeping their knowledge base accurate and up to date. It signals that your platform is a living, breathing, continuously optimized resource, not just a dusty archive of abandoned thoughts.
That makes total sense.
Furthermore, search engines heavily reward established URLs that receive significant fresh updates.
That shifts the perspective entirely. And mining your own backyard also feeds seamlessly into Method 7, which is engaging directly with audience questions.
Yes.
Building a dedicated question bank from the emails, the direct messages, and the blog comments you receive, because the rule of the silent majority is a really powerful mechanism here.
The psychology of audience interaction dictates that most people will remain passive consumers. So, if five people take the time out of their incredibly busy days to find your contact page, write an email, and articulate a specific question.
Which takes real effort.
It does. You can safely, mathematically assume there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people wondering the exact same thing silently. They just lack the time or the motivation to ask you.
So when you write an article or record a piece of content answering that specific email query, you are instantly providing immense value to a massive, quiet swath of your audience.
You're solving their problem before they even ask it.
You are practically reading their minds, giving them the exact answer they were looking for before they even had to type it into a search bar. It is essentially a cheat code for guaranteed relevance.
You are removing the guesswork from your editorial calendar. You are letting the audience dictate the curriculum, ensuring that every piece you produce solves a verified existing problem.
Which brings us to the final evolution of the Pidcot system. We have done passive observation forums, we've mined our own historical archives, and now we move to active, face-to-face, or at least screen-to-screen direct engagement, going straight to the human source.
Method 8 focuses on attending events, conferences, and seminars. But the crucial, kind of counterintuitive insight the source material provides is that the best, most actionable ideas rarely come from the keynote speaker on the main stage.
Yeah, the stage presentations are usually heavily rehearsed, legally vetted, and polished to the point of being a bit generic, honestly.
Exactly. The real magic, the raw, unfiltered truth of the industry happens in the hallway chats.
The coffee breaks.
It happens during the debates over terrible convention center coffee between sessions. When the professional guard drops, that is where you hear what top performers are actually struggling with, what software is failing them, and what emerging trends are genuinely making them nervous.
And the Pidcot material also notes that you shouldn't just observe the conversations. You should observe the physical format of the event itself.
That's a great point.
The architecture of an event can actually inspire the architecture of your content. For example, if you sit in the audience of a really vibrant, engaging panel discussion featuring diverse, conflicting viewpoints, that structural format might inspire you to write a roundup article featuring different experts debating a controversial topic in your field.
You borrow the dynamic energy of a live experience and translate it directly to the written page.
Yeah.
And if you want to capture those diverse viewpoints yourself, Method 9 is conducting original interviews.
Mm.
But there is a massive trap here.
Let me guess, boring questions.
Exactly. If you ask standard, boring, PR-friendly questions, you will get standard, boring, PR-friendly content.
Like, so where do you see your company in 5 years? It puts the reader straight to sleep.
You want to provide your audience with a peek behind the curtain. To do that, you have to ask questions that force the expert to pause and genuinely reflect. Ask them about their most spectacular, embarrassing failures.
Oh, people love hearing about failures.
They do. Ask them what industry trend completely blindsided them last year. Ask them what fundamental truth they desperately wish they knew on day one of their career. Those vulnerable answers are where the true gold is buried.
It humanizes the experts and gives your audience access to hard-earned wisdom they literally cannot find anywhere else on the internet. And speaking of direct access, Method 10 is the ultimate, unapologetic, reader-centric approach surveys.
Surveys can be amazing.
Sending out a questionnaire and asking your audience directly what they want you to build next. But I have to push back hard on this one because everyone's inbox is flooded.
True.
People are so relentlessly busy. How do you actually get an audience to fill out a survey without profoundly annoying them? Even with a 5-question limit, conversion rates on surveys are notoriously terrible. Is there a psychological trick to getting them to actually click the link in the first place?
It is a highly valid concern. Survey fatigue is a massive hurdle, which means the execution has to be flawless. First, you must eliminate all technical friction. Use seamless tools like Google Forms or Typeform, where the first question is instantly visible.
No clunky logins.
Right. Second, as you mentioned, be absolutely ruthless about brevity. The Pidcot source material recommends a hard maximum of 5 questions. If a user clicks a link and sees a tiny progress bar indicating there are 20 pages of questions ahead,
they're gone.
They will abandon the page immediately. And finally, you must offer a genuine high-value incentive just for clicking.
So not just a generic thank you.
No, it needs to be an exclusive downloadable guide they can't get anywhere else, a significant discount code for your services, or entry into a highly desirable giveaway. You have to respect their time and actively reward their cognitive effort.
Basically, you are paying them for their data with immediate value.
And when you structure it that way, the psychological payoff for your brand is astronomical. People intrinsically love seeing their personal input reflected in the media they consume.
Oh, for sure.
When you publish a massive new guide and start it by saying, 60% of you specifically requested a deep dive into this topic in our recent survey, so here it is, it builds a profound sense of community. the audience feels a distinct sense of ownership over your work.
Like they're part of the team.
Exactly. They are no longer just passive consumers. They have been elevated to the role of collaborators.
They actually help construct the house they're standing in. That changes the entire emotional dynamic of how they interact with your brand and your content going forward. They are invested in its success.
Beautifully said.
So, bringing this all together, looking at the entire spectrum we've covered today, well, the big overarching takeaway from these incredible Pitcock methods is that creativity is not some magical, elusive gift bestowed upon a lucky few by the universe. Creativity is simply a muscle.
And like any muscle, it requires deliberate, systematic exercise to grow. The more you implement these 10 methods, whether you are setting the 10-minute timer to force a wild brainstorming session, synthesizing the chaos of a niche forum thread, executing the 1-2 punch with breaking industry news, or simply mining your own greatest hits for hidden value, the stronger, faster, and more resilient your creative output will become.
The blinking cursor on the blank page completely stops being a threat. It just becomes a welcoming workspace. It's incredibly empowering once you realize you hold all the tools.
You really do.
And as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave everyone listening with a final, slightly provocative thought to mull over. We talked about cross-pollination earlier. So I want you to look around your room right now or mentally scan your butt shelf. Which of your seemingly unrelated personal hobbies, whether it's tending to a chaotic vegetable garden, studying the openings of chess matches, baking complicated sourdough bread, or reading retro sci-fi novels, could provide the perfect, entirely unexpected analogy for the exact project you are struggling to write today?
I love that exercise.
Right. The inspiration isn't hiding. It is already surrounding you in your daily life. You just need the system to connect the dots.
That is the beautiful essence of true cross-pollination.
Thank you for listening to the Pitcock podcast. I will leave a link in the description below. Subscribe to our channel if you haven't and activate the notification bell so you don't miss our new uploads. Also, press the like button and rate us if you love our show. It helps in the recommendation algorithm so others can access it too. Thank you for being there with us, and don't forget to click on the stars below to give us a rating.